Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are locked and loaded on a Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're coming to you from coast to coast. As always, I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Michael out there just about an hour outside of Philly, so you know where I gotta start. How are we holding up over there?
Not good. Not good. You know, I was going doing some research for the show this morning. I'm sure you have it. But if you had a Diamondback Rangers World Series ticket, it's worth $17.50 to 1.
Crazy.
You have one, Stormy? Tell me you do, please.
You know, it's in my back pocket, actually, Michael. No, if only, like, who could have imagined, Michael, that this would be our World Series? And like for the Rangers, I think that is a surprise, right? But the Diamondbacks, like the word that comes to mind for me is shocked. I could not have imagined that this is what it would be. And you think about in the preseason, they were 65-1 to win the National League. Like that, not even World Series, just the National League.
Hello,
Michael, you there? Can you hear me all right? Well, we're going to try to reconnect with Michael here for a moment. Unfortunately, some early technical difficulties today on a Wednesday. But yeah, remarkable, like we're talking about, that the Diamondbacks could be in this position. 65-1 odds to win the National League. Biggest preseason long shot to win the pennant since the Rays back in 2008. Who were 75-1. This is an organization that lost 110 games in 2021. So they're also the first team ever to reach the World Series within 2 years of losing that many games, Michael. It is remarkable what the Diamondbacks have done, but how frustrated are our Philly people out there right now that the runs dried up at the wrong time?
Hello?
Thought we had Michael back, unfortunately. But we'll just keep trucking along here. I'll let you know when we're able to reconnect. As for the World Series, we do have odds out there. The Rangers favored again. So these Diamondbacks who have been underdogs all throughout continue to be. Two wildcard teams going head-to-head in the World Series. The Rangers, a -170 favorite for the series. D-backs +140. And for game one coming up on Friday, the Rangers around -160 for that opener. But I talk about the runs drying up for the Phillies in this spot. And you have Trey Turner and Bryce Harper, who are two $300+ million players, going a combined 0-for-8 last night. Both fly out with two on in the two runs in the seventh inning, an opportunity to come back, and they continue to lose at home. Michael, we got you now.
Yeah, we sure do, Stormy. Yeah,
there we were
doing great. I listened to you the whole time. We were doing really good. You know, I think here in Philly, there had to be a moment where there's an adjustment to the norm, right? They were hitting and pitching at such a high level that, you know, unfortunately, in the most critical moment, they lost it all. As you mentioned, their high-priced players didn't kind of play to where they were typically going. And, I mean, look, the Diamondbacks, Chris Russo is going to have to retire from Mad Dog Radio. I mean, that's what he said on the air. I don't know who's going to do the show with me on Friday. But he said if the Diamondbacks were to win, you know, and he didn't think it would go back to Philly. He didn't think they win game six, and they won game seven. So, you know, he's going to have to retire. Now, he claims today he's retiring from radio. We shall see.
I have this weird feeling that that's not going to happen, but wow. Yeah, what a statement to be made. That's why when you're on those national airwaves, Michael, you can't say stuff like that. I bet the Twitter population is coming for Russo today.
No question. And well-deserved, you know. I mean, look, in fairness to him, he loves baseball. He's a Giant fan. And his handicap didn't think that this could happen, just like a lot of people didn't think the Diamondbacks could do it. And yet here they are. And they beat a lot of good teams along the way. So credit them for getting there. And I'm not sure the networks are happy with Arizona and Texas in the World Series. I'm sure they would have liked Philadelphia and Texas, Philadelphia and Dallas, you know, that would have been a little better, but we shall see. You know, it's the second year in a row the Phillies have gotten very far, World Series last year to the championship this year, and just can't close it out.
Yeah, unfortunate situation for sure out there, but and I was one of the people, Michael, we came on here, we had a back and forth about this playoff format and the way things are and these 100-win teams getting knocked out early and da 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 da. for these two teams being wild cards to make it this far, I'm not even mad though, because it's been good, impressive baseball. Like they've been fun to watch. And so I know everybody out there is up in arms right now. And probably if you were to do like a poll in Arizona and a man on the street and walk up to people and ask them how many Arizona Diamondbacks players they could name, even in Arizona, I doubt a whole lot of people could do it because they're not a name recognition type of a team. But I'm excited for this World Series. I like an underdog story. And so we'll see how things play out from there. But again, the Rangers, a minus 170 favorite in the set. D-backs continue to be a dog, plus 140. Let's get into some of our NFL talk, Michael, because this is the time of the week where we start getting, you know, a lot of information from press conferences, injury report updates throughout the week. And we got an interesting update in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill still dealing with that ankle injury. Rookie from Kentucky, Will Levis, is evidently going to make his first NFL start this weekend, according to Ian Rappaport. Mike Vrabel, of course, told reporters yesterday that we would see both he and Malik Willis. But it appears that Levis is going to be the primary signal caller, which is something you kind of anticipated and alluded to yesterday.
Yeah, and look, Vrabel's not backing off of Willis, and rightly so, because, you know, he's going to use both of them. And he's going to force Atlanta to prepare for both. And I'm sure that inside of the Tennessee facility, coming back from London, that they've been working on both these guys playing in the game. You know, this is a home game against Atlanta. They go on the road for three straight games, Pittsburgh, Tampa, and Jacksonville, you know, with a rookie quarterback. So they're going to have to figure this out. It sounds like Tannehill is going to miss some time. I doubt if they'll put him on IR, but it sounds like he's going to miss some time. And let's face it, this offense wasn't gelling even then. I mean, they've scored 32 points in the last 2 weeks. They struggled. They haven't gotten over 20 first downs in that time, and they've turned the ball over. It's hard to get Henry going when you really don't have much of a passing game. I mean, think about it. They threw for 104 yards against Baltimore over there. Now, they kept it a close game because Baltimore was good inside. It wasn't good in the red zone. So it's going to be tough sledding. And then you add in the dynamic of the trade, right? Where is this team going? And I think it's going to collect picks. I think this team's searching for their quarterback, and this injury to Tannehill allows them to find out what they might have. I don't know if you're going to get a concrete answer. I know you have an answer on Willis. I'm not sure you're going to get one on Levis this early. You've watched Willis play last year. I mean, Willis is one of the few players I've ever seen in my NFL career of over 40 years that got pulled out of a preseason game because he wasn't really allowing the other players to play. Vrabel just had enough of it and switched quarterbacks mid-series. Never seen it before. But understanding why, because he was just taking off and running. And you can't really run an offense like that. So we'll see where this goes with Levis. We'll see how he develops, and we'll see if the Titans have a future. But I get the feeling by next Tuesday, this won't be the last trade the Titans make.
Yeah, and again, the trade deadline less than a week now, coming up next Tuesday. But Levis, a guy who was predicted by a lot of people as we got close to the draft as being a top five guy, ended up slipping to the second round, but the Titans went up to grab him at 32. And we know he's got the big arm. We know that his senior year specifically, there were some accuracy issues and not as great a numbers as he had his junior season, but how much of that was due to the poor offensive line play that he had? So I like what you're saying. Just might as well see what you have at this point before you get set for next year and are starting that rebuild, as you already are starting to offload some pieces. But Malik Willis, probably just a change of pace option, you would imagine, in this game. I don't anticipate we see a lot of Malik Willis, just kind of to change it up and force the look a little different for Atlanta.
Well, I mean, look, they're 28th on third down and third down conversions. They're not a good third down team. They're 30th in red zone. So what I think you'll see from Willis is the option of putting him in where you could have run pass options, you know, where he could actually take off and run for a first down, where he could actually bootleg out and try to score a touchdown. I mean, this is a team that doesn't score a lot of points, has a hard time keeping the football. They have to win with their defense, but then their defense, if you can block Simmons, you got a chance to make a lot of plays in the passing game. We saw Baltimore throw the ball really up and down the field. I thought it was just the beginning of where Lamar has started this incredible year. Lamar threw the ball really well the entire game, had a bad interception. But I think when you look at that team, you know, they're vulnerable to the pass. And I think that's going to be the challenge for Atlanta. Ritter has thrown the ball really well. Right. He's turned it over. And he's going to throw the ball against Tennessee. The reason Atlanta won't win the game is if Ridder turns it over. The reason Atlanta will win the game is if he doesn't turn it over and throws the ball effectively. The line's already at 3. I think it stays at 3. It could get to 3.5. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of money pouring in on Vrabel as a 3-point home underdog as we get closer, which will keep the line at 3. But I kind of don't get the sense, Stormy, as much as I love Vrabel as a coach, he has a lot of options right now. His team isn't very good. His offensive line isn't very good. And I think Atlanta is the best team in the NFC South. And for all the crap that Ridder takes online and from all the experts, he's actually playing better than he ever has, except he's turning it over.
Yeah, coming off, obviously, an important division win for Atlanta. My thing with Desmond Ridder is that he's turning the ball over in different ways. And that's what frustrates me is, you have the interceptions and okay, maybe you have an interception problem. Maybe you're just off target or throwing balls a little bit too high, but no, now you also have a fumble problem. And when you're at the goal line and you're in the red zone and you're losing the football in those areas, that's what can't happen. And those are game changing types of plays. And so I wish there was at least a consistent way he was turning the ball over so that we could hone in on that one thing and fix it if you're a coaching staff, but here we are.
I mean, the fumbles are just the fumble and the sneak and the fumble going in the end zone is just really relaxing. I mean, that's just really that's a lack of concentration. Yeah, I think they're fixable. I'm going to see the glasses half full.
OK, very good to hear, especially if you are somebody who was a preseason believer in the Atlanta Falcons for that division title. We're going to step aside. More quarterback news when we return and update yet again on Deshaun Watson and the Browns.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now and get access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120 at VSiN.com/subscribe. I think I had a little dyslexia just now, but I got through it. We got through it. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. Sorry about it, Tony, with you. And I will make sure I read this report correctly, Michael, because we have an update on the Deshaun Watson situation out there in Cleveland. Despite a report earlier this morning from Tom Pelissero that an MRI earlier this weekend showed no additional structural damage to Deshaun Watson's shoulder, Kevin Stefanski has come out and announced that PJ Walker will start yet again this week as the Browns head out there to Seattle. And we've already seen a little bit of line movement from that standpoint. The Browns were getting 3, now getting 3.5 on the road come Sunday.
My question to you, Stormy, is if Watson played, are the Browns any good the way he's played? I mean,
I haven't
he's
been
hurt.
Impressed.
I mean, it looked really bad trying to throw the ball in the first pass of the game. I think the Colts probably would have preferred Watson to play than PJ Walker. Not that Walker's any good, but I mean, look, Deshaun has not come anywhere close to the year he had two years ago. It's not even close. And his numbers this year are very similar to his last year's numbers. There's been no real improvement. And the injury is affecting him, certainly. But to me, if I was saying to somebody in the league today, you know, I'm sure Seattle wants, you know, Watson to play. I mean, I don't think they have a problem with it. It isn't like we make a big deal out of it. Oh, my God, Watson's not playing. Really? Does it matter? I mean, the line moved to 0.5 probably because they're trying to get people to buy Cleveland back at 3.5 to try to get some Cleveland money in here. Because, you know, Cleveland's going to have to win the game with defense and find a way to run the ball on a good Seattle run defense. But let's make no mistake about it. If Cleveland could get a refund on this deal, You know, like I said yesterday, I send out more of Millie's refund boxes than anything. I print out those labels constantly. I mean, if Cleveland could print out a return label online for Watson, I think they have to do it, don't you?
And Watson's so glad that they do not have that gift receipt, that they're unable to do so because he's got that 230 mil guaranteed and he's feeling good from that standpoint. But you're dead on, Michael. What we saw against the Colts, 1 of 5 to start the game with nearly 2 interceptions before he ended up getting knocked out. And through this season, he's only played, 3.25 games to this point, none of which have been stellar. His best game of the season was against the Tennessee Titans team that we just talked about in the previous segment that's dumping assets and is a 2-win team at this point. It's not like their defense is anything more than a middling defense, truly. So Deshaun Watson, this is just an unfortunate ongoing thing. And I think the reason that it's such a big talking point is, yes, the money, Michael, but also because of what our eyes saw from him in Houston and seeing how electric that he was at times, the playmaker that he was. But when you have 2 years off and you're not playing competitive football and you're dealing with all of the off the field stuff that he was dealing with, then you have the pressure of this contract. There's a lot of stuff going on, and I never want to question a guy and how he's really feeling from an injury standpoint. But after the game, he said, whenever I step on the field, I don't want to have any pain holding me back and be handicapped. We had a great week of preparation. Felt like it was the best opportunity for me to come back. I just wasn't able to finish the game. So I wonder what he's feeling to the point where he's struggling as bad as he is, yet they're not able to see this on an MRI machine.
Well, you know, I feel bad for Brown fans.
Yeah.
Because look, they have next year, his cap number is going to be $63 million. His 2025 cap number is $63 million. His 2026 cap number is $63 million. He is going to be responsible for 22% of the cap. Now, in 22 and 23, he was only responsible for 4% in 22 and 7% in 23. So they boosted these numbers up, and 24 is when it kicks in. And they have no recourse. And of course, he has a no trade clause in his contract. Well, who's trading for him? I mean, they got to figure out how to fix this. They're stuck with them, and they're stuck in ways that even Denver's not stuck with Russell Wilson, or Arizona's not stuck with Kyler Murray, or the Giants aren't stuck with Daniel Jones. So this is bad. And I'm not saying the kid's not hurt. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying we haven't seen the player that got this contract. We've yet to see the talent that went into this contract. We've seen nothing but really very below average play.
Yeah, I was going to say, Michael, not even flashes, right? Not even like glimpses really of the guy that he was. And bigger picture now for Watson and the Browns, Michael, are we going to waste this defense because we know how talented they are? And that division continues to get more difficult because Baltimore, the way that they've shown up the last couple weeks, obviously they're the favorite in the division right now. Steelers keep accidentally winning. We joked about it yesterday, just like Tomlining themselves to dubs where they have 4 wins right now this season. And the Bengals, you can only anticipate, are going to get better and better as the season goes on. So I worry for the Browns as the season as a whole, that they're going to waste what is a top tier defense in the National Football League because of their quarterback, who everybody thought was going to be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really crazy. Kind of embarrassing, right? I mean, they went all in and they pushed everybody to the side with this contract, right? They pushed everybody to the side with the contract. And, you know, Atlanta looked like they were going to be the favorite. And once Cleveland guaranteed everything, skill and injury, Atlanta was left to the wayside. And thank God they were. Thank God Carolina was saving money. They didn't sign Hassan Riddick because they were saving money to try to get in the Watson Derby. Look how fortunate they are. Now, they turned around and traded a bunch of assets for Bryce Young. We'll see how that works out. But, I mean, Cleveland's on the hook here. And as good as they are on defense, we know this. You're not going to win a title just by running the football. You're going to have to make plays in the passing game. And can they do it? I mean, I think they've got to figure out, can they get the rookie ready to play? Can they get him to where he, because when you're with PJ Walker, there's a ceiling here now, right? I mean, where are we going with this? So the challenge is for Andrew Berry, and really the challenge is for, when you break it down, it's for Stefanski. I mean, he's got to figure out a way to where he's got to sit in his office and say, okay, how do I get this fixed? What do I do? And I can't get anybody in here to help me fix it. I can't sign a veteran. I got to deal with what I have. If they had Josh Dobbs right now, what do you think would be happening?
Yeah. No, it's a rough situation out there in Cleveland.
They made the move because they wanted Thompson Robinson to be the backup. And then they put him out there and they go, oh, wait a minute, we misjudged him in the preseason. He's not ready. I think they got to go back to Thompson Robinson and see if they can get him ready, because the ceiling for Walker is not going at. Where are we going with him?
So is that a similar situation?
And this injury for Watson, Stormy, I think it's going to linger. I think he's going to go on IR. I think this is going to linger for a long time.
So what you're saying about Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Michael, is this just a similar situation to what we're seeing with Will Levis over there, and that we need to see what we have? We've only seen him in regular season action one game. Obviously, it wasn't good, but we saw some bright spots in the preseason. So let's see what he could bring. Could he bring a spark? Because he does have that mobility factor, right? He can bring a little bit of pop potentially if the offensive line can protect him a little bit. And the sack numbers were just so bad that game, and he looked very, very off. But maybe he just didn't have the clutch gene, and the adrenaline didn't hit him in the right way for his first start. Needs more opportunities to settle in.
I think oftentimes the same thing McDaniels did with not playing O'Connell. You know, it would have given him a chance. You know, when you go to Brian Hoyer, you really are not having any chance. And so I get why they do it. Because coaches can only see what's right in front of them. Oh my God, I got to win this game. And if I play, you know, O'Connell, he's going to take sacks like he shouldn't take. And, you know, and I think that's ultimately what happens. And you end up playing defense when maybe if we take Thompson Robinson and try to develop him, we got a chance. It's easier for us to say it from afar than it is internally, but I think it's our only chance.
Which is, in my opinion, a kind of a scary thought. Again, based on just what we've seen so far to this point, that your season is hanging in the balance and you've just invested so much into a player that hasn't delivered and doesn't look like you're going to be able to, that you say, hey, let's try to put this ball in the hands of the rookie from UCLA, that it was an ugly first outing, but just see what we have and if there's something that can help us take off. It's, a rough situation. The Ravens, once again, the division favorite right now, and rightfully so, a little over even money, plus 105, Browns 3-1, Steelers and Bengals 5-1. We are going to step aside here on the Lombardi line, but when we return, we still have plenty more news and notes to get to around the National Football League, as well as an update on Survivor, because despite the biggest selection this past week, staying alive, there was a lot of carnage beyond that. We'll get to it in a moment. Stay with us here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College hoops are about to tip off, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide. This year's guide includes Matt Eumann's top 25 rankings, who could be this season's Florida Atlantic or SDSU, all 32 conferences previewed, Wooden Award candidates, futures, and season-long prop bets. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $120. You'll get VSiN Pro access to everything we do until May 1st. That's all college basketball season long, March Madness, and beyond for just $120. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And let's get into a little Survivor talk, Michael, because it is, I'm going to call it a wonky week with some of the options that are available when you look at how many people still have certain teams available too. There's 1,237 entries remaining. And last week we saw the bulk of people get by when they took Seattle over the Arizona Cardinals. 1,078 entries were on Seattle, but six of the next seven highest selected teams all got knocked out, Michael. So the Bills, Bucks, Rams, Niners, Raiders, Saints, over 500 entries collectively out with those teams alone.
Well, I mean, we're in week eight, right? Yeah. I mean, this is not going to be easy sledding. There's no gimme putts here, right? They don't call it Survivor because it's easy, right? You're going to have to navigate your way. There was an old saying we had at the Raiders that the jungle's not dangerous if you know the trails, right? So you know the trails here at Survivor. It's going to be dangerous, right? You know, there's no, you know, if you've used Detroit or you have to save Detroit for Thanksgiving Day, that certainly would be an option against the Raiders. You just might have to buck it up and use, you know, boy genius Brendan Staley and the Chargers this week. I mean, when else are you going to use the Chargers if you don't use them against Chicago?
So that's,
I mean, when else?
Yeah, Michael, that's the big one I was looking at, especially because as far as available entries go too, about 1,000 people still have the Chargers available. You look at some of those other teams like Miami, Buffalo, only about 200 entries have those teams available. You talk about a strategy standpoint with the Lions or with the Cowboys for the holidays, people have been saving them. It's a tough road. And I hate the idea of backing the Chargers. But at the same point, if you're going to lose to a rookie quarterback from a D2 school and that's the way you go out, you're still ticked off you go out. But I think you can at least hold your head slightly higher, maybe.
It's the smarter play. But that's here's the question I would ask you as a survivor, former survivor contestant. I watch Buffalo. I've watched Buffalo now for 3 weeks. Buffalo is not a good team with a great quarterback. Let's just put that out there. They're not a great team. They've got a great quarterback. And obviously there's a lot of injuries on their team, but Von Miller's not Von Miller. He's not playing anywhere near the level that we think Von Miller could play coming off the injury. Hyde and Poyer, both those guys are older. This is not a great team. This would be a sub-500 team if they didn't have one of the best players in the league in Josh Allen. So my question to you is, when do you use Buffalo? Because if you use them, you're going to have to be really diligent in using them.
Yeah.
Because they're not exactly, you know, I wouldn't take them against the Bengals. Maybe I take them Monday night at home against the Broncos. Probably would. But other than that, I'm not taking them in any of the remaining games.
I think, and if I remember correctly, I think the bulk of people used Buffalo against the Giants. So only 16% of entries still have the Bills available. But I agree that they're not a team that I would really necessarily trust to use moving forward because of all those injuries on the defense. And you talk about Von Miller not playing up to his level. Now you have Ed Oliver, who missed time last week with the toe. He's limited at practice this week. You're already down Daquan Jones, Matt Milano, Trace White. It's just compounding from that standpoint that Buffalo's hard to trust. And when you lose to a team like New England the way you did last week and you looked like you were outplayed the entire time, had a chance to win and save some of those people in Survivor and you didn't, like, it's a very untrustworthy team with the exception of, hey, Josh Allen's going to play Superman and wear the cape to get us wins right now. So they need to get things together defensively in a big way and figure out what they're going to do, especially to, like, run the football too.
If you watch that tape, that game, Josh Allen wills them back with his ability to not get tackled. If anybody else is playing quarterback in that game, New England wins by 2 touchdowns. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's just how bad Buffalo's fallen. I mean, they are nowhere near. Last year, they averaged 6.1 yards per play. Defensively, they averaged 5.9 yards per play this year. They allow 5.6. Last year they were at 6.1 and they allowed only 5.1. I mean, every category you look at hasn't been very good. And when you look at the pressure rates on Buffalo, what New England did, New England pressured 40% of the time in the game, and it was a problem for them. And that's without Judon, that's without Uche. So I think what I bring up Buffalo, not to kill them and disparage all the Buffalo Bills Super Bowl hopes, is injuries have taken a toll on their team. But I think the lesson here, Stormy, is don't save teams.
Yeah.
Use your teams early in this tournament because you could end up like, Buffalo, what am I going to do with them?
Yeah. No, 100%. And also, I want to, like, correct the way that I said what I said about the Chargers when I say you can hold your head higher. I just mean, if a D2 quarterback is going to beat me, then, like, I know I can feel confident in my choice. Like, I made the right choice for the weekend fading that player, right? Like, that's, in my brain at least, the reason I would lean Chargers, especially, like you already referenced.
On the road, too.
Yeah.
on the road. I mean, you know, he got by with it at home because the Raiders quarterback was bad and the Raiders defense couldn't tackle anybody. I mean, there was probably over 200 yards of yards after contact tackles in that Raider tape. So you're right. I think that's the better play. What's your other, what other option would you consider?
So I would ask you about, because around half of the field still has Baltimore available. And granted, that is a road game against Arizona, but the book's kind of out on the Cardinals right now. And they have kind of turned into what we thought they would be. But I also wonder if we're just like, we're riding so high on Baltimore and it seems too obvious maybe, but I would feel comfortable with that. If I had a Baltimore entry, I feel like maybe that would be the way that I would go this week. But the Cardinals, you know, dogged a lot of people this season with that win over the Cowboys.
If I had an entry, if I had both Baltimore and the Chargers, I would save Baltimore.
Okay.
I would take the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers.
Because the Ravens are going to be better for longer.
Chicago. Exactly. The one thing about the Chargers is they can throw the football. The one thing about the Bears, they can't defend the pass. And the Chargers will throw the ball up the field. The Raiders, their longest completion was 15 yards. The Raiders didn't even try to get it up the field. They had the pass interference call, but other than that, they really didn't even try. So the Chargers will throw the football effectively. And they'll make the rookie quarterback, Badgett, they'll make him have to play from behind, which will be very disastrous for him. And they'll have a hard time blocking Mack, and they'll have a hard time blocking Bosa if Bosa's healthy. So even if I had the option to play Baltimore and I was in Survivor, I would take the Chargers because this matchup does favor the Chargers.
Okay, well, let's continue that thought process then if we're talking about not saving teams for down the line. And I know to an extent you kind of have to for the holidays, but with the Lions still available, about half the field have the Lions. Monday Night Football against the Raiders. 1,000 people have the Eagles. It's a division road game, but they're laying 6.5. People really like what they've seen with Philadelphia lately. The Cowboys also laying 6.5. But again, people are saving them for later on down the line, taking on the Rams. Is there any other one of those that you would put up and say, okay, if I had to pick between the Chargers and this team, would I still take the Chargers or would I take the other?
Well, obviously, Kansas City's out of the equation. Most teams have used them. I would think about if I haven't used San Francisco, I think the San Francisco matchup against Cincinnati is also one that favors. I think Cincinnati has gotten overvalued here on their bye week.
Interesting.
Orlando Brown's not going to play. I mean, he's going to play, but he's hurt. I mean, watch the second half of the Seattle game. If you held a Seattle ticket in that game, you're frustrated as anybody. I think this line is undervalued. I think this should be closer to 7, but the Niners are coming off a bad game, of which the last 2 weeks, the Niners are 2 plays away from being undefeated.
Yeah.
Moody making a field goal and Wilkes not calling 0 blitz. They're 2 plays away from being undefeated. This line, to me, is a little bit out of joint because of the 2 losses, whereas everybody's expecting Cincy to be better. And I don't see it. Their offensive line isn't good. Their scheme is stale. And defensively, they'll struggle. They will have a hard time because Kyle will run the football. Last week, he couldn't run it against Minnesota. Now he gets home. They will run the ball. I think this, if I had San Francisco and I would probably use them, nobody would expect you to use them in this scenario. And you probably might want to save them for Arizona later, but I would consider it.
Yeah, and I was going to say a lot of people, the bulk of people did already use San Francisco in that game against the Cardinals. If I was still alive at that point, that's what I would have done. So this would be an interesting one. If you still have San Francisco available and you want to take a chance and go against the grain to stay alive, that's a very interesting pick. And about the same number for the people that have the Chiefs available. That one is in Denver, but we know 16 straight times Kansas City has been able to beat the Denver Broncos. We are going to hit the break here, but the Lombardi line rolls on with more NFL action next.
This- This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. While we were chatting it up, talking all things Survivor this week, got a little bit of breaking news that came across the wire, Michael. It appears Frank Clark, who was just this past week released by the Denver Broncos, might have a new home pending a physical today. He might rejoin the Seattle Seahawks, Michael. That move the needle for you?
Wow. Yeah, you know, not really. I mean, I didn't think Frank Clark was playing very well when he was in Kansas City. That's why they released him. And then there was a conversation about perhaps he was going to go back to Kansas City. He, you know, he redid his contract. He took a huge pay cut to kind of get out of the Denver situation. But I could see it for Seattle because, I mean, look, Seattle lost one of their best pass rushers last week to an injury. So that became a real problem. I can't say his name or else I would say it for you. But, you know, I mean, I think that's really been the issue. So they had to make that move, and now they bring in another pass rusher to kind of offset that because this defense has played pretty well. And I think ultimately that's kind of what they need to get. They need to get one more pass rusher. It's Joshua Anu, if you say Stormy, I'm bad at it.
That's not one for me this time around, Michael, but we'll try to get the phonetic pronunciation out there soon. But yeah, so I think that, yeah, it's a piece that they are looking for and needed. And this is such an interesting week trying to figure out which teams are going to try to make a push. And Seattle, a team that we know had a lot of upside last year and are trying to find a spot in the NFC for a wild card. But I mean, if 49ers keep losing games, maybe the division's open. I don't know. But no, just kidding. But
no, I mean, look, his name's Anosu.
There you go. Well done.
Uchenna Anosu, right? And they signed him from the Chargers, and he's been really good for them. But they need that other outside guy. Darnell Taylor hasn't been as good as they'd hope, his second-round draft pick. But I think this kind of, you know, look, they're a good team. They're hard to run the ball on. Like we said all offseason, Dermont Jones makes a difference. Jarrett Reed, who they've had before, and he's come back again, he's helped. Even Mario Edwards has helped. This front's been pretty good. And the secondary has been outstanding with Witherspoon, and they're playing Jamal Adams down in the box like a linebacker. So Bobby Wagner being back helps them. The concern you have to have about Seattle so far, Stormy, and why they're not going to catch the Niners has more to do with Geno not being Geno.
Yeah.
I mean, Geno hasn't played what we saw him play last year. I think that's the bigger issue in terms of his accuracy, in terms of his throwing the football, all those things, expected completion. Those numbers, he's not anywhere near where he was last year.
I know it's not reality, but I feel like it's a common thread when guys get a contract and that's above what they're used to getting, right? Every time it seems like that next year things start to fall off a little bit. And I mean, we're seeing that evidence with Daniel Jones as well. Granted, it's due to injury right now, but it's not like his on-field production is something we've seen after he gets the contract. And it's like time and time again, this is what we see, which maybe let's go to that Giants-Jets game coming up this weekend. I'm not sure, Michael, that I understand this.
Yeah.
Presumed quarterback controversy with Tyrod Taylor. Like, it's not like he's been lighting things up, and he has had the opportunity to have Saquon Barkley. They've been lining up Jalen Hyatt a lot more than our guy Daniel Jones had the opportunity to. Darren Waller is finally off the milk carton, which is good news for New York, but like, it's still Daniel Jones's offense. Like, when he is healthy and available, he's going to be the starter. I don't know why this is newsworthy.
Oh, they're gonna, if Daniel Jones clears a physical, he's the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I mean, the organization, look, just like somebody's making news that the Giants told Barkley they're not going to trade him. I could have told Barkley that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They'll have no interest in trading him. Look, the Giants are stuck in time. They love their draft picks. They're not giving up. They believe in Daniel. I think if they had the first pick in the draft, they would take somebody other than a quarterback. I mean, they truly, truly believe, when I say they, quote, the Mara family, John Mara, the president, and, you know, all the other Maras that go into it, whether it's the Rooney side or the Mara side, they're invested in Dan. They believe in Daniel Jones. Does Brian Daboll? I don't know. Does Joe Schoen? I don't know. They signed him. They okayed it. They walked into it knowing it. But that's where they are. And there's no way they're going to trade Barkley. They love Barkley. They can't wait to pay Barkley. He just won't take the money. They can't wait to pay him. They cannot wait to pay him. So, like, this is just a non-story. Oh, we're not trading him. No way you're trading him. You wouldn't trade him if you got three number. If somebody offered you three number ones, you'd say no. That's how they think there. That's why they're never going to win there. I mean, they won nine games last year. You thought we're going to have a parade down Broadway. I mean, I got more crap from Giant fans for all year because everybody's getting paid and it's a 9-1 team that couldn't beat a good team. They couldn't beat a good team. I mean, it's like the Dolphins. Everybody talks about the Dolphins going to the Super Bowl. Dolphins going to the Super Bowl. They haven't beaten the Dolphins haven't beaten a team with a winning record to go back. Have to go back to September of last year.
They've got this explosive offense, but God forbid they play a good defense or a physical team. And that's the, like, finesse versus physicality debate. I feel like that we have so much on here, but how it's more often than not in the NFL that that physical team is going to outplay the finesse team. We even see that in college football. We were talking about Utah and USC last week. It's a similar situation, but just to go back to Giants Jets here, though, just a reminder to anybody who's keeping an eye on these health reports, Daniel Jones still yet to be cleared for contact with that neck injury. So not looking super great for this week. Could be Tyrod Taylor again. The Giants are getting three at home, coming off obviously the win this past weekend, but it's home for both teams technically, right? So neither here nor there. Total,
I don't know how you handicap the home game here. Both teams are in bad shape. Both teams don't trust their quarterback. Both teams' offensive lines are bad. Both teams' defenses have played well in the last couple weeks. It ought to be, you know, but, like, I think what you saw, why I brought Buffalo up earlier, is the Giants did a great job on Buffalo. New England, you know, Buffalo had the ball for 32 minutes. New England did a good enough job on them. Allen had to make some really good plays. So the Giants defense is playing better. And everybody's talking about the Jets like they're just going to, the Giants are going to roll over. I'm not sure that's going to be the case here.
They just need to start averaging more than 12.1 points per game. That's all that I ask. Yeah. We do have a low total in this game, understandably so, 36.5. All but one of the Giants games so far this season have stayed under their respective totals. The Jets, from a betting standpoint, Michael, historically have lost seven straight games coming out of a bye and are 1-5 their last six against the spread coming out of a bye. We did also, while we're on the Jets, get an update from Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers Tuesdays on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday, where he said he's not progressing as fast as he did earlier in the year, and it's frustrating him a little bit that he's not progressing to the standpoint that he wanted to. Here's Rodgers on his latest recovery.
It's been a tough week of rehab. It's been kind of smaller gains. I think when you get to a certain point, you're not maybe having the jumps that I did early on where you're out of a cat and you're out of a boot and then you're in a shoe and you're up in the percentage on the Alter G. It's been more of a grind the last week or so, but a lot of good things we're trending towards. It's just a matter of trying to get down to 100% walking, like as far as it looking normal. And then after that, then there's progressions. I think that'll maybe start to take a bigger jump.
Yeah, he said he's still walking with a limp right now. But I mean, Michael, you can only be light years ahead for so long, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, it's a great story. He's trying to come back. And I think he's doing it more for his team to keep them engaged than he is to realistically come back. Because we know this, playing football in December and into January, because that's ultimately would be 4 months, is going to be really hard if you've been on the couch. It's going to be a challenge. And the speed, the quickness, the athleticism of the game, it's not going to be something you just catch it right into it. Like, you're not going to pick up the marathon in, you know, at the mile 14 and figure you can win the marathon. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think it's always been more of a media conversation and a conversation to keep his teammates engaged than it's been reality. That being said, I mean, you know you're going to run into roadblocks on rehab for an Achilles. He's ahead of himself now. I mean, even Cam Akers, it took him, what, 6 months, 7 months, and that was early? He did it early in the summer. So I don't expect him to come back, and I don't expect Zach Wilson to, I think, what you said about the bye week. I mean, we'll see how Zach Wilson's going to handle pressure, handle the different looks. Can he get him in the right protections? Can he get them going at home here in this game, you know, against a defense that has done a really good job over the last couple of weeks?
I wonder when the Jets and Giants play each other, how they do like the merch. Is it all because it's a Giants home game? Is it still like they have Giants stuff everywhere? Because it's fun to see the transition when it's, you know, one versus the other. But so it's weird.
It's like, a Giants home game. It's the Giants. They each have their own locker room, so they don't have to worry about that. But it's a Giants home game. It's the Giants signage. It's the Giants, you know, all the Giants stuff in the stadium to sell. So
super interesting. We got hour two rolling on next on the Lombardi Line.